I'm Wendell.
And I'm Patrick.
And
this is
Yes
But Why
Podcast.
Well, I knew I wanted to study theater because I was already in it, but UD was actually a surprise. It's funny because on paper, I sound like a classic UD story because I come from like a Roman Catholic Irish family. Both of my parents went to UD. They got married at UD. So it sounds like, you know, the typical UD story.
Oh my
but
God, that's so fun.
I'm not Catholic. It wasn't something I'd ever planned to do, but I was just kind of looking at schools. I just randomly decided to go to UD, and I walked on campus, and I just got this feeling of like, oh man, like, I really like this. I think I belong here, and I wasn't expecting it. I didn't want to go to a small school. I did not want to go to a Catholic or any kind of religious school, and so UD did not sound at all like what I would want, but I just had this, you know, like, I just felt like it was right, and then I met with Kyle Lemieux, the chair of the drama department, and he was just very, I could tell he knew what he was talking about. He expressed a lot of interest in having me there, and I just felt like, you know, maybe I don't want to be lost in a sea of, like, a huge school where no one actually knows who I am. Maybe I want this very, like, intimate setting. And, yeah, I just kind of followed my intuition there.
Yeah. Man, there's something in the air over there. Same thing. I was not convinced. I mean, don't get me wrong. I flew to Dallas to look at it. But then when I looked at it, I myself, like, when I walked on campus, I was all like, yep, this is it. It's so weird. Yeah, they get something pumping out of that tower. It's just like potion number 9. And you're just like, it seems cool here. You guys want to talk about Aristotle? Wow. Like, it's believe me, I understand. Take me back, actually. You said the fact that you're a drama major, not at all a surprise because you'd been doing it. Tell me, if you're traveling all the time with your family, you know, moving from place to place, how did you get involved in theater, or was it film, before you went to college?
So I don't come from, like, a theater family, an acting family. I didn't see live theater ever in my life until I started doing it myself. So I wasn't really expecting it. But when I was a teenager, I think I was like, or actually, you know what? I think I was like 13. So I was kind of more on the preteen side. I was just sitting at home. I was watching, do you remember that show, E! True Hollywood Stories, where it was like mini documentaries about celebrities?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so I, oh my gosh, I used to love that, but I was watching...
Where is it now?
Yeah, bring it back.
Seriously.
But they had one about J-Lo, Jennifer Lopez, which is like, that's not who you think of when you think actor, but I was just watching it, and I had that feeling, like the click in your head, where I was like, oh, yeah, that's what I'm supposed to do. Like, I'm supposed to be like an actor. I'm supposed to be some kind of performer. And so then I didn't do anything about it for a few years. I just kind of had this feeling that it was what I was supposed to do. And then when I was applying for colleges, I just realized, I was like, oh, this isn't going to fall into my lap. Like, I have to make decisions. I have to make stuff happen. So I started taking acting classes in Dallas. And then I just... I realized if I wanted to go to a theater college, I had to have something on my resume, like some kind of experience. So my high school, I started the drama club, just got, you know, like 4 or 5 people to join, and then had our art teacher direct us in a play so that I could put that on my resume when I applied to colleges. And then had my family friend, Anna Carlson, who teaches high school theater in Fort Worth, I had her help me, like, learn my audition monologues and just kind of try to make up for lost time, I guess, as an actor.
Yeah, man. You, like, really embraced it, and then we're like, oh, I'm doing this. You're all over the place. Where did you take acting classes in Dallas?
I took classes at this, it's called Heart and Soul Studio on... it's actually an on-camera acting class because at first I was sure that I was interested in film, which, I mean, I still am, but it was just teaching you, like, techniques for acting on camera. And then, I don't know, I just kind of fell into theater instead.
Yeah. Interesting. The on-camera stuff is so different. Like, I've definitely taught a couple of workshops at, like, there's a kids acting studio in Austin, and I've worked with, like, you know, 12 through 16 year olds there who are, like, preparing to do auditions for movies. You know what I mean? And it's like, wow, that's such a wild thing. Like, when I was a kid, it never occurred to me. Like, film never occurred to me. I don't know why. It just, like, I didn't try to find a class in it. It was just like, get up on stage and sing Oklahoma. You know what I mean? Like, so interesting. Yeah. You're so on point. I like it. Awesome. That's super fun. So once you decided you liked it, you were like, Mom, Dad, I'm going to be doing all these things now. You're going to help. And they're like, cool. So that's good. I'm glad that you...
surprised by it.
Were they?
Yeah, well, just because I'd never said anything about it. I just one day was like, hey, this is what I'm going to do with the rest of my life. I've never done it before, but I'm going to do it.
Were they yeah. really surprised, though? Were they like, oh, my God, I can't believe you would do such a thing? Or was it like, oh, yeah, that makes sense?
Well, I think my dad was kind of more on the that makes sense, you know, I'll support you kind of thing. And my mom, I mean, my mom's just very pragmatic. So I think she's always kind of like, you know, I think most parents kind of do this where they're like, well, how are you going to make money doing that? How are you going to live doing that? You know,
sure.
Which I mean, and I think she also, I think my big thing, the big thing for my mom was that she wanted to know I was actually committed to it because I haven't really made a lot of money doing it yet. But I think the fact that she's seen that it's an important part of my life and that I've dedicated a lot of, you know, like 9 years now to doing it, that she's like, oh, this isn't just a phase. Like, she isn't just throwing her life away. This is actually her purpose.
Yeah.
So, and I think that's daunting, honestly.
Yeah.
I think it's daunting, I was going to say, for young people or anyone, really, who hasn't started their creative life yet, but they want to, is that they feel like they're going to be judged or, you know, like, or they're going to be viewed as like, why you? Why would you be in this industry, you know? And it's, I think you just have to start, you know, and you just have to accept that some people are not going to understand, especially not at first.
Yeah. They don't understand later either. Like I said, I'm a little bit older than you, and there are still times when people are like, oh yeah, you still doing that? I'm like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I do. That's how I make the money. And they're like, oh, cool. All right. Interesting. Like, they really want to be like, are you independently wealthy? Like, no, I'm just very good at not paying bills. It's one of my particular skills. No, it's not terrible. I swear, everyone that's listening, no, keep doing it. I appreciate you saying that, though. You're totally right. Daunting to start and it's totally daunting to start an acting career when it feels like, you know, like, why would anyone pick me, especially in this world of the internet where there's so many people online doing a million things at all times. The crazy thing, too, about that is that, like, the method in which you would accomplish the task of even becoming famous is different. Like, it's not even the same. Like, you can't even do the same things that you would have done 20 years ago. It's not like, yeah, go to an audition. Oh, look at you. You're in a movie. Like, it's, like, so much more than that. So many other, like, ridiculous things where it's, like, you know, branding and, like, doing projects and stuff like that. So before I go down this rabbit hole of the new crazy way of hitting it big in the in this new world, of which I'm, you know, gonna spout fake stories. I want to ask you about University of Dallas. Now, When I went to University of Dallas, Kyle was a student with me, so I don't know him as a teacher.
Wow.
And yeah.
That's awesome.
He was a senior when I was a freshman, was he? No, he was a senior when I was a sophomore. Yeah, so he's a couple years older than me. Tell me what the experience for you at University of Dallas was. What kind of training do you feel like you got while you were there, and how much of it do you use now in the theater that you're doing in your life?
Mm-hmm. I think that UD was very much a text-based experience, like a text-based approach to theater and to performance. And in that way is very cerebral, very intellectual. And it was a lot of, like the classics, which is great. I mean, there's a reason why we still read the Greek plays. There's a reason why we still read Ibsen, is because they're, timeless. I think Kyle, I love Kyle. I love and I admire Kyle Lemieux. He was definitely kind of like a withholding father. Like, I really wanted him to approve of me, but he's not the type of person to get really like emotionally sappy and like praise you unless you really earned it. You know what I mean?
Yep.
I was totally. Always kind of vying for his approval, which was probably a mistake. I don't know how he was as a student, but that's how I felt with him as my teacher for sure.
Yeah, he's a totally stalwart adult for sure.
Yeah.
like when we talked later in the years after college and like working on projects and checking in with each other, even before Facebook was like a thing where you did that, like bro did a lot of solid work and is like, he's a great dude. No, he's absolutely a wonderful human being. But like everybody's different when they're 20 versus when they're older, right? I was like, Kyle, who went to UD is a different guy than Kyle who runs the UD drama department.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm sure you have to be. You have to deal with a bunch of 18-year-olds going through existential crisis. I'm sure you have to put on some kind of character for that.
Oh, I don't think it's a character. I think it's just like, you know how we were talking about, like, as you get older, you get chiller and you get, like, you've lived through a bunch of stuff, so like the amount of things you're going to worry about is way less. So that's really more what I mean. Like in college, sure. We were all a little like, oh my God, what's happening? Whoa! You know, cause we're crazy, like 18 or whatever. And theater people, come on. And, and then, you know, then we're older. So when you're talking to him now, he's chill. He's fine. Like, he's married, he's got kids, he's got a solid job. He's chill.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of glad that he's withholding. That's the right thing to do. Our head of the drama department, Patrick Kelly, total withholding. I still wonder right now what he's thinking about me.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that's good. I mean, I think that prepares you way better for life, for a career outside of school. I mean, because I think one thing that I really learned in college was how to deal with rejection, because I was not one of those people that was in every main stage or, you know, like constantly being cast and stuff until my later years. I think it really taught me like that I have to hustle to get noticed and that I have to find opportunities for myself, which has been really I think that's probably the most valuable lesson I learned in school.
Nice.
And I think
did
if it had
do
been
a lot
handed
of your own
to me,
projects?
So what I did was my tactic was to get in with people that I wanted to work with, like one of our other drama professors, Stefan Novinsky, who's, you know, an amazing teacher and director. I knew I wanted to work with him. So they offered this like midterm class where he was teaching acting. And since I lived in Dallas, I was like, great, I'm gonna do that, and I'm going to get Stefan Novinsky to notice me. So I took that class, and then after that, he was kind of, I would get cast in shows that he was helping in, like, you know, the studios that the seniors direct. Mm-hmm. I would get cast in shows, but I feel like he was one of the people talking to the seniors, like, oh, I know that she can do this role, you know? So, I didn't direct any of my own shows or something like that, but I just kind of found my niche was working with, other students, like, doing studios or doing, like, the after-hours program that Kyle started, where it's, like, students could put on whatever they want, and just getting, and basically getting other people to direct me.
Yeah. That's super great. I love the idea, like, what a proactive way of getting out of the world what you want by, like, going and taking a class with somebody or, like, finding a way that you can work with them so that that way you can have the experience and then, you know, with the time that you spend together, you develop a bond. And then, yeah, of course they're going to think of you before they think of other people because you are connected to them. That's exactly how all of it works. Whenever I talk to my students and they're going to do a film thing, and it's like, if you're going to start working on film, then you need to be somebody that people want to hang out with. And they're like, what do you mean? I'm like, well, film is about a lot of sitting around. And if you are like, when you get cast in it, they are like, who do I want to spend time with? Because you're all sitting in a room for like 5 hours before anything happens. So they want to like,
right,
be able to hang out with you. And it's going to be like, if it's a movie, 2 years. You know what I mean? Like, you need to be somebody who in an audition immediately shows them, like, not only am I good at acting, but you want to hang out with me. Like,
oh yeah.
So it's cool that, but it's super smart and like way better than just trying to get that in all in an audition by taking the classes and doing different stuff like that. Now that you're graduated, are you doing that kind of stuff in Dallas theater? Like, have you found directors that you're interested in working with and you've found ways to get involved with them to help better your chances of getting cast in their shows?
Oh, totally. I mean, I think this is probably, I mean, how it's done everywhere. Basically, I just show up to shows, and if someone offers me something, like, especially when I started, like, if I was just offered something super small, I would just say yes to everything I could, just so that I could, you know, get, like, facial recognition, like, get to meet people. And honestly, like, I'm not a great networker, I don't think, I'm an introverted person, I can be very shy, but it's just kind of like just showing up. Like, just showing up is the baseline, like, that you can do, and just introducing yourself to people. You know, I'm not the type of person, I don't think, that's like, you know, that just naturally like carries a conversation for days and days and days. But just kind of going out, meeting people, showing up to their shows, telling them what I think of it and like what I like about it, and just, you know, making friends with people.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so helpful. I mean, especially too, because like, especially in this world, we're all a little distant from one another. So I'm sure people appreciate just a friendly face coming up to them after a show, not somebody who's like, let me tell you how to do it different. Instead, you're like, hey, that was great. I really liked X, Y, and Z. And they're like, oh, finally, I love it. Hang out with me forever.
Yeah, and it's a hard line to hit between, like, kissing up and, like, creating a connection with someone, I think.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it can feel very similar sometimes, and it's one of those things you just have to learn to, like, you know, not feel, like, grossed out by, I guess, you know? Because I think it's easy to get in your own head and be like, oh, I mean, I don't want to, like, play to people's, you know, approval or whatever, but, and then just kind of reframing it in your mind and just being like, well, how are they going to know you if you don't show up? How are they going to know you if you don't introduce yourself? Like, it's just what you have to do.
Yeah. How does anybody meet anybody? Like, you have to go speak to a human.
Exactly.
You know? I mean, the more you continue to do that, even, like, because it's hard to make friends as an adult when there isn't something like college to arrange stuff for you.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's so much mm-hmm. harder. So, like, the idea of going to plays and just talking to the people involved in them and trying to be friendly, that sounds great. That's exactly who you want to hang out with. It's exactly the crowd you need to get into. Tell me about the Dallas scene. Like, you're going to see plays, you're checking out stuff. What kind of stuff have you done? And, like, what kind of stuff do you think is happening in Dallas that interests you?
So, okay, I've been living in Dallas for over a decade, and I went to school here for theater, but even then, I didn't really know really what it was like, so I was just kind of jumped into it after I graduated. My first show was the show, it was called Dallas, Etc. It was put together, one of them was Dylan Key, who, I don't know if you know him, he also went to UD. He was a drama major, but it was just this little devised show where we just wanted to talk about what Dallas was, who the people living here were like specifically like young creatives like us. And it was just like, I mean, I didn't get paid for it. It was just like a couple of nights, or maybe it was just one night, like just a really small show, but I devoted like 3 months of like rehearsing and creating to it. And I'd never done anything like that. I'd always, you know, like I went to UD, I did the classics, I did, you know, like Three Sisters or whatever.
Yeah, I know.
Like that kind of play. But, and then I was, wow, this is really cool. Like, and at that time, I think the theater scene was like all about found spaces, like being in warehouses and bars, anywhere you could find, really. And it was just like young people making original work, and like just having a discussion about the city that we were in, which I loved. And then I think a year after I started, so that would have been maybe 2016, we had problems where like the fire marshal was, I mean, honestly, rightfully telling us like you can't just like crowd a bunch of people into an incorrectly zoned place, like that's not safe. It wasn't safe for the performers, honestly. And I mean, at the time we were all super outraged because it was kind of like there's this amazing movement happening in your city's arts and you're stifling it, essentially. But then I think it really speaks to the artists in the city that we adjusted and we grew. So now I think there's a really big focus on legitimizing ourselves through like finding like spaces that are insured that we are zoned to be in. And also I think a result of that is that there's a much bigger focus on actually paying your artists. Like I just did a show with this group, Artillery, which is, they're a really young startup. They started like a year and a half ago. And I saw firsthand, we just closed a show called Dirty Turk, Dirty Immigrant, and I saw firsthand Ilhner Oskar, one of the founders of the group, because I used to live with her, like finding, like the stress of finding a space that was, that we could use legally, and then also applying for grant after grant after grant to get money for the space and also for her actors. And I think I think the Dallas scene has really matured just in the past 2 or 3 years, really, that I've been here. I'm excited to see where it goes from here.
How many groups are there currently? Like, what are there, 3 or 4 existing groups, or were they all shaken up when the fire marshal said, "Hey, get out of the warehouses"?
Well, let's see. I'm not sure the exact number of how many kind of like small startup groups there are. I can name some. There's Artillery, I just mentioned. There's Prism Co., which does like physical theater. They do original pieces. They're very inspired by myth. Let's see, what else? Shakespeare in the Bar is a really cool group. They do, I mean, it's exactly what it sounds like. They do Shakespeare in a bar. It's very lightly rehearsed. It's really fun. It's the most engaged audiences for Shakespeare I've ever performed for. like, because they're laughing and they get to drink, you know, it makes it fun for them. And one of the most brilliant things they do is that when an actor calls a line, everyone takes a drink. So it's like everyone's actually listening. They're like, yeah, we all get to drink together.
That's super funny.
Much more, yeah, it's much closer to what I imagined Shakespeare's audiences were actually like. So
yeah,
that's
totally
really cool.
That's super fun.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you can move around to different groups and stuff? Like, it's not, so you named a few, but like, is it where like each individual group is like a set group of people and they just do their own thing? Or is it more like there's a few directors that are leading little movements and then like the actors and the performers kind of like ebb and flow between them?
Mm-hmm. I think that there's a lot of shared talent between the groups. So I think that I think there's probably a core group of like creatives and directors who are in leadership roles in most of these groups. But I think there's a lot of like moving in between them. Like I've never been tied to one particular group, and I think that's kind of part of been my tactic. Is to work with as many people as possible, because when you meet, because of the way that this like DIY Dallas scene is like, if you work with five people at one show, those people all probably work with five other groups that you can also, you know, have that connection to. But I think like, yeah, I mean, and also like, I think people in Dallas, this is probably true in a lot of places, but I think that they tend to wear a bunch of different hats. Like, they're performers, but they're also writers, they're also directors, they're also producers, you know? So there's kind of like, you might do directing for one show and then you'll perform in someone else's show, you know? Like, that kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Interesting. When you're creating, so right now in the world, are you creating your own projects or are you auditioning for other people's projects? Like, are you writing on your own or no?
You know, I don't audition that much anymore. I mean, I probably should, but I think that a lot of my work comes from collaborating with other people. And I do a lot of, like, original work, like, not necessarily just my original work, but, like, a devised collaborative piece with other people. And I mean, I think this started from college, was that this has always been the kind of work that I've been drawn to and that also just wants me is kind of groups of people like super rich companies. Just putting on, like working together to create a piece together.
Are you working on anything right now?
I'm not, because I'm actually leaving Dallas in a month. I just closed a show Saturday, and so I'm not taking on anything really big right now.
Where are you moving?
I'm not moving. I'm going to Tokyo for 3 months, though.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. You know, my like last 10 years in theater have been all improv based. Like, when I moved to Austin, I got in with an improv theater and I never looked back. Like, I used to just do theater, you know, plays and stuff like that. But when I got into improv, I just soaked it up and I was all over it. And I was actually just about to suggest to you to potentially do improv if that's something that you are interested in. And hilariously enough, I recently did an interview with an improviser from the United States who now lives in Tokyo and runs an improv show there that is bilingual. So it's like half in English and half in Japanese. And it's like such a, like, what a funny connection of that. But like, if you have a chance, like while you're there, you should go see the show and like, I don't know, do stuff like that.
Yes, please.
That guy's super cool.
That info there.
Yeah. Yeah. I just think his, like, when I talk to him, and you know who I'm talking about, audience, because his episode is going to come out before this episode comes out, so they'll know who I'm talking about. Mike Staffa, you know what's up. But that chat that I had with him, I mean, it sounds like the scene in Tokyo is, like, amazing. And, like, there's just so much going on, and he's, like, you know, there's a lot of, you know, just booming comedy. Like, there's all sorts of different styles, and he was teaching me all the different ways that, you know, Japan does comedy. And I was like, this is so awesome, so great. Tune into the episode, especially if you haven't, other audience members. But yeah, I'll totally send you information about that, because that's super great. So you're in a holding pattern. What is your, like, in your brain, like, not necessarily, like, the next show, because clearly, like you said, you're going on a trip and you're headed out. Mm-hmm. Are you going on the trip to, like, fill your creative coffers, like, and get you new ideas? Or is this just a vacation and I just happen to have creative stuff for you to do like that?
Mm-hmm. It's absolutely a creative focus trip. I've been doing this for 9 years, and I've never in that time been able to just focus on it without also being in school or working full time. So I just kind of I just wanted to devote some time to just studying and practicing what I love. And I lived in Japan when I was a kid, and I've wanted to go back for a long time, and I have family living in Tokyo that I can stay with.
Nice.
Yeah, so, and there's this, the reason why I'm going is because there's a Buto studio. Have you seen Buto before, or videos of it before?
No, tell me about it.
It's a form of Japanese dance, like, theater, and it started after the atomic bombs were dropped in Japan, because it was like a way of dealing with the cultural trauma that happened afterwards. And so what they do is they cover themselves in white, like they were covered in ash after the bombs fell. And it's just a very particular form of movement and creating and telling stories that I've been fascinated with for a long time. But I mean, I can't study it here. I've looked. I can't find classes. So one of the guys who started Buto, Kazuo Ono, has a studio. He's not alive anymore, but his studio still operates in Tokyo, and so I'm going to be studying there while I'm out there.
Wow, that's so awesome. You're going to Japan to study dance. That's the coolest thing ever.
Yeah, I'm pretty psyched. And I hope to just take in as much art as I can. I've been talking to my brother who lives out there about, like, there's this all-female theater troupe that he wants to take me to see. I want to see No. I've never seen No before except in video. I want to see that. And I'm hoping, like, you know, there have been a couple instances, like what we just talked about, where someone was like, oh, I know someone out there. And they do, you know, this thing that you would probably be interested in. I'll connect you. And it's kind of crazy. You know, like, the connections you have in other countries that you'd never imagine.
Yeah. Plus, the fascinating part about you going to this other country and focus on theater and dance and expression is that the cultural differences totally reform how they communicate through art. And it's such a fascinating thing to go to a different group of people to see how they process stuff. Like, the fact that you were talking mm-hmm. about that the dance was a way to process the cultural trauma, I was like, wow. Like, super intense. Like, I would love that. I think it would be fascinating for America to try to do some dance, you know? But we're not, that's not our way. You know what I mean? Though, you know, I was thinking earlier when you mentioned J-Lo that she was probably, not only was she, like, top of her game dancer, but she was also in Living Color as the head of the dance group. And that was kind of revolutionary. So she's a pretty solid lady to be inspired by, for sure. Plus, her cop show that she has right now is really good, and she's back on another dance show, inspiring more dancers to do exciting things. So I don't know why I've all of a sudden started thinking about J-Lo, but I was just thinking about you mentioned she was thinking about dancing. You mentioned dancing, and then I was like, oh yeah, and J-Lo. Oh man, so
the
fun.
J-Lo episode.
It's the J-Lo, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you just want to send a photo of J-Lo, that'd be great. No, just kidding.
Oh, God. I wish.
You should get a tiny little photo of J-Lo, and then while you're in Tokyo, you take selfies with you and the photo of her in some great place in Tokyo. It'd be great. I'm glad that you're laughing, because I've gone off the deep end of not so funny, funny shit. This is so cool. I was going to ask you one last thing, and then we'll wrap it up. And maybe you've already answered it, honestly, because the last thing I wanted to ask you was, how do you deal with the moments when you're feeling not so creative? Like, when you get into a creative slump, what do you do? What's your method for getting yourself out of it and moving forward and keep doing it?
Oh, yeah. Okay. There's a couple things I would say. First of all, I mean, I kind of touched on this before, but I would say just make yourself do something. Just, like, walk outside and talk and, like, walk into whatever it is you do, like improv or music or theater, because I think that you'll always surprise yourself. I think that, it's easy to get very paralyzed by doubt. And I think really the only thing you can do is just move. Another thing I would say is, it's helpful to me to have a bunch of different creative outlets. So, like, if I'm trying to write something and I'm being very frustrated by it, then, like, I like to embroider. I'll pick up some embroidery, and it just kind of, it's almost like a confidence boost almost. Like, you can just start doing some kind of small project, and then you're like, okay, like, I didn't just lose my creative brain all of a sudden. Like, it's still there. And I think fostering trust in yourself is really super important. Like, knowing that, just believing that if you have a gift and that it's not going to go anywhere. Like, even though your brain tries to tell you it will, it's not. It really is not. Like, trust me when I say that it will always be there. It's almost like, it's like, it's just faith, really.
Yeah.
It's like not allowing your doubts to be stronger than just the kind of very humble belief that this is what you're supposed to do and it will always be there.
Yeah. I like to say the difference between people who are successful in theater and people who are not is that the people who are successful kept doing it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, just keep doing it. Do it again. Do another project. Go on to the next one. Don't quit, because if you quit, well, you don't do it anymore. But if you don't quit, well, then you're just between projects.
Yeah, like, it really is that simple, honestly.
Yeah. You're right, though, too, about, like, just in your brain being confident in your own, like, no, this is what I'm doing. Like, don't let other people try to convince you. And there is a place for the pragmatism of all the people that, you know, wish we got business degrees, but, you know, really, how many friends do you know that have business degrees that are not using them? I have a lot. So
yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it was Woody Allen who said, half the battle is showing up, or most of the battle is showing up. But I mean, you know, Woody Allen is obviously a team of garbage. So now I started telling people I said it. Quote Katie.
I really thought you were going to say something terrible. You're like, I think it was Woody Allen who said, I can do what I want and no one will stop me. What? No. Oh, I'm sorry. What was I talking about? I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm kind of glad that you, like, gave the quote, but then, like, backpedaled on the quote, because I was like, do I feel weird about the Woody Allen thing? I don't know. Like,
oh, I mean,
I didn't like his movies
should,
before I knew he was gross. I was always
yeah,
like,
I mean,
God. Yeah, yeah, 100%. I grew up in Boston, though, so a lot of Boston is about romanticizing New York. So there's that also leads to an oversaturation of Woody Allen. And then you're like, oh, God, I get it.
No, I get it. You're insecure about yourself. Thank you.
Yeah, welcome to life. That's how I feel about stand-up comics that go on stage and are like, I'm terrible. And I was like, okay, I've decided. Like, don't. Tell me how cool you are, even if it's weird. That's what I want to know. Like, I don't want you to be like, no girls want to date me. It's like, oh, boring. I don't want to know. Sadness is not what I'm into. If I wanted sadness, I'd go to a drama. Oh, man. Well, hey, Katie, thank you so much for taking time out of your evening to chat with me and sharing all your stories. I'm totally excited. I will send you a message with all the information about the Japan stuff that I know. And I'll Facebook stalk you, let's be honest, about your trip and be very excited for all the things that you're doing. But you're very inspiring, working on stuff and going and taking these like dance classes. Like, so cool. So totally cool. And I love it. And I'm glad that I got to share you with my audience.
Yeah. Thank you so much. This has been really fun and really inspiring for me. So thank you so much.
Good. Awesome. Well, thank you and good evening, everyone.
Thanks for listening to Yes But Why Podcast.